Welcome to the Weekly Green, a KXCI mini-program on environmental topics from southern Arizona and the rest of the world. We are joined today by Kate Shelby, Digital Content Manager at Edible Baja Arizona magazine. In the most recent issue, she writes about her endeavor and that of her family to eat only local food for 30 days. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan.
Truly 100% local?
Well, it depends on whether you consider my water to be local. I saw some people bring up that the water's coming from Colorado, so that wouldn't be local. So unless I was doing well water, that wouldn't be local. But if you count the water as being, you know, something that travels from everywhere, yes. I used local salt that was brought from the Sea of Cortez. I avoided pepper because pepper is not a locally raised product. Basically, I cut out the things that aren't something that I could source within 250 miles of Tucson and found alternatives and ate within that boundary.
The water from Colorado is within 250 miles.
Exactly. Yeah. I figured water flows everywhere. So, you know.
Right. All water is one. What was the best thing that you ate?
One of the best things that I ate was tomatoes from Sleeping Frog Farms. They have these wonderful meaty tomatoes. They're just, you know, you get your tomatoes at the supermarket and they're kind of pale and they have lots of juice in them and there's not a lot of flavor. Any tomatoes that you get at the farmer's market are going to be much fresher and much more vibrant and much more flavorful. But the ones from Sleeping Frog Farms in particular, I just adored. They were so meaty. They were very little juice. And so you get a lot of flavor from not a lot of tomato. I really enjoyed discovering some of the local meat options out there. Double Check Ranch, both their own beef as well as chicken from Joel's Foraging Fowls. It was a very different experience eating something that you know is locally raised and you know how it was raised, as well as the actual flavor. I felt it was better. It was definitely fresher. It was a lot redder than you would get when you're buying from the supermarket, so that was pretty cool. Beyond that, I think that my favorite meal was when I pulled together, well, there's a couple choices. Recently, I actually did a thing where I cooked with Shelby Thompson, who is another writer at Edible. She does recipes for us. And she and I made some pizzas together using Hayden Flour Mill's flour. They actually have a pizza flour that's already blended.
Is it a mesquite flour?
I don't think that Hayden Flour Mill's puts mesquite in that one. I did have some things made with local mesquite flour coming out from the Rezonation Farms, I believe. This blend is all raised here in Arizona. It's raised up in the Tempe area, and it's actually a really cool operation. I got to go up and see Hayden Flour Mills, and there's the fields, the farmer working his land there, and then he brings it over to the mill, which is on the property, on the corner of the property. So that's very, very fresh flour. And you can buy that at a number of places in town. I found mine mostly at Time Market, as well as I think I found some over at the Conspiracy Food Co-op or Food Conspiracy Co-op as well.
Is that the one on 4th?
Mm-hmm. On 4th Ave. And anyway, so you take this pizza flour, and then we got a hold of some local goat cheese from Fior de Capra. You can also buy that at the co-op. And we topped it with some tomatoes, we topped it with some onions, we topped it with some caramelized, let's see, what else we do? Onions, tomatoes, some local olives, which were great, and then some local rosemary that we'd grown. But that, I think the pizza was probably my favorite at the end of the day, that or when we roasted the chickens into this very extravagant meal because I needed to feed a lot of people. So we roasted 3 chickens and shoved them all in the oven, and that's actually the scene I open up the story with. That meal turned out very well as well.
And then a glass of locally grown wine.
Yes. Yeah. I had wine from Flying Leap Vineyards. This was one of the things I discovered when I was reading Megan Kimball Works at Edible, but that's not actually why I read her book. She just recently came out with her book Unprocessed, and it talks about her adventures eating a year of unprocessed food here in Tucson, Arizona. When she was doing that, she was also mostly sticking local, not because she had to, but because if you want to get unprocessed, local is easier to do with that. And it also, it's kind of, the two are very related. If you want to eat local, you're going to eat less processed food because you're going to be making more of it. And if you want to eat less processed, you're probably also going to be buying more raw ingredients, which means buying closer to home and reducing the process in what comes to you is going to drive you towards eating more local. But I was reading in Unprocessed about the process that goes into wine. And she actually went to Flying Leap Vineyards and was talking to them about what happens with their wine. And they are one of the few, or at least they were at the time that she was writing the book, one of the few that is 100% locally sourced in their wine process. There are a number of wines that are using only Arizona grapes, and actually that's something else that we covered in this current issue of Edible, but the Flying Leap people have a longer history with that. When you're dealing with cheaper wine, it's mechanically separated, which means that it's not going to have the care given to what grapes are going in or if there's extra stuff going into it. you know, rotten fruit or rodents. You want to go for a little bit above that. So it's like a $19 wine. It was great. It was a very delicious wine. The local beer I also had, 55 Brewing, just came out with a local beer that they're calling Our Valentine. Our Valentine is made using Arizona-grown hops that were actually wild hops harvested off of Mount Lemmon. It's made using barley that was grown for them by Hayden Flour Mills, and then just the water around here. It was really good. It's a nice, light beer. They had thought that it might end up a little bit more hoppy in the flavor, but it didn't. It's actually very mellow, which I like. It was really good. They said that one of the things that's really interesting about working with wild hops is that you don't know what the hoppiness is, that in beer making now it's gotten to the point where you have the hops that are this much hoppy flavor. With wild hops, you're just guessing. You know, you just kind of throw it all in and you make the beer, and it turned out really well.
It's also the problem with growing things, because the economy of farming is based on predictability.
Yes.
It's really hard to meet your bottom line if you don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, one of the things that really became illuminated for me with the eating local. And I'd never been to a farmer's market before. I'd always meant to. It was always one of those things that I should do. And then I go to the farmer's market. I'm seeing these individual people who are dealing with the economic realities of farming themselves. And this is their livelihood. And now is a much more compelling reason for me to go ahead and restructure my schedule a little bit, to go out and get to the farmer's market and support these individual entrepreneurs that their livelihood depends on people like you and I actually going and supporting, like, this very small business model. You can go to the organic section in the grocery store, but you're probably going to be supporting a super farm that doesn't really need your money, and it isn't sending that money into businesses here in the state. So we know that it's important to shop local for all of the benefits to our state's economy. It's also important to shop local because you're benefiting, like, your neighbors.
What was it that you could not get locally that you missed most?
Right at the beginning, I realized how little sugar I was getting. I'm not a huge sugar fiend, but you'll hear about people who go on, like, a low-carb diet, and suddenly they're realizing that they don't get to eat this, they don't get to eat that. You can get honey, and you can, depending on where it's coming from, I guess you can get agave syrup. But regular sugar, sugarcane, is kind of not really an option. You can grow sugarcane here, but I didn't find a source for getting Arizona-grown sugar. That definitely changed the profile of what I was eating a little bit, because, again, when you're locally sourcing, you're going to be eating less processed foods. Like, first and foremost, I was eating less bread. I was eating less pasta. You're going to have a lot more just whole foods, period. So lots more fruits and veggies, lots of beans, the occasional bit of meat. Meat is much more expensive when you're buying locally raised meat, but I also feel like that's a good price to have in mind. I think that we've definitely gotten very used to having very, very cheap food, and it hides from us the costs that are happening along the way to bring us that very cheap food. And when you're buying locally, you know that more of that money's staying in the state. You know that you're helping out an individual that lives here, and you know that you're paying the value that you're actually getting out of it.
What about the general cost? Was it more expensive to eat locally?
It was not. So I tracked my budgets, and I'd been tracking for a few months before that, and I worked out my averages, and I actually spent about $100 less in the month where I ate 100% local than I had in my previous months. Part of that was because we stopped eating out almost entirely. I did eat out a few times. There are some local restaurants that have more of an emphasis on locally sourcing food. And so I figured that it would be a little unrealistic if we just stuck in our house all the time. So we went to Zona 78, which has an emphasis on sourcing locally as much as they can. Went to Diablo Burger, which has a similar emphasis. But besides that, a lot of the time we were cooking at home. One of the things that's been a really big news item, right, has been about how we throw away about 25% of our food. If you're buying the stuff locally and you're going to the farmer's market weekly, you tend to, or at least I tended to, feel it much more keenly, both what was going on in my fridge and also if something did go to waste. I really noticed it, because you're looking at, well, okay, so I've got this cheese and I'm going to need it for this recipe later this week. Because unlike the supermarket, you can't just go to the farmer's market if you forget something. So you're buying in advance, you're planning your meals, at least somewhat. I'm not a meal planner, I'm not that organized, but being able to kind of say, okay, so I've got these ingredients and they will allow me to make these things. And then if an ingredient goes bad, that's money directly out of your pocket. You definitely feel that. And it's also something that you don't have to work with. And similarly, because I wasn't just running, you know, because I forgot a thing at the store, I got a lot more creative about my cooking. You know, if I was missing an ingredient, or if I realized that I'd forgotten to buy a thing, there isn't a farmer's market again till next Friday, then I just figured out something else that would work. That way, I used that ingredient before it went to waste, so that cut down on my food waste. Planning ahead cut down on my food waste, and also probably cut down on those impulse purchases. It is really easy to make impulse purchases at the farmer's market because there's so much good stuff. But at the same time, you know, you're paying a little bit more for it. So I think, at least in my case, I put a lot more value on it. So I made sure that when I did get an item, I used it and I used it well. And so overall, I saw with cooking at home and being more conscious about my spending and about not wasting food, I saw my budget go down by about $100.
Do you have the impression that the producers themselves are throwing out less than the supermarkets do?
What I've learned about it, and this was outside of the eating local, this is just from general research, one of our big problems that we have is the USDA guidelines for what kind of food can actually go to the supermarket means that you have a lot of produce that gets left on the farm. It definitely seems like, so if you go, say, to the Sleeping Frog Farms booth at the farmer's market and you get their carrots, which are wonderful, but they're kind of ugly. They're ugly carrots, and this has been a concept that we've heard before, you know, talking about ugly foods and how they're just as good as the beautiful, you know, perfect foods that we see in the supermarket. But there might be a carrot that's split off into two roots instead of just being a single point. And that's perfectly fine. It still cuts up and tastes like a carrot and has all the nutrients in the carrot that you'd want. But that wouldn't be a carrot that you would see make it to a grocery store shelf. I think that producers have the ability to bring more of their food off of their farms and have it not go to waste, but I think that we have some policies in place that restrict what they're able to do on a large scale, because right now we still don't have the majority of the population going and supporting producers at farmers markets. I think that causes more of that food to go to waste.
What about eggs?
Oh my goodness. Okay. If you were not going to buy anything else at the farmer's market, the one thing I would say you should buy there is eggs, or go to the co-op and buy the Raisonation eggs, because they are so much better than what you can get when you're going to the supermarket. The difference is just startling. If you crack, one week we had some Hickman's eggs. They're local. They're here in Arizona. So we had some Hickman's eggs, and then we also had some eggs from the farmer's market. And just the difference between the yellowness of the yolk and the flavor between the two, it was shocking. It's actually why the eggs always sell out first thing. Like, if you're going to go to the farmer's market to get eggs, you need to get there early, because they're always gone by the time the farmer's market is halfway through. But like I said, you can get the Raisonation eggs over at the co-op, and those are pretty much just as good. But I don't think I will ever be going back to the mass-produced egg. It's absolutely necessary.
Same with the tomatoes, I imagine.
Pretty much all of the produce. I really do not see myself switching back to my old way of shopping at the supermarket for most of my stuff. And then, you know, having the occasional item, it's much more like I go to the supermarket if I have to, and then the rest of the time I'm buying everything I can at the farmer's market or from a local grocery store.
You're going to grow some yourself?
That's the next step. We had a volunteer butternut squash in my backyard this year. We're going to try to put in the groundwork to put in a garden so we can start planting in the spring. I know nothing about growing food in my backyard. It's a good thing I work at Edible, because I think I have some people there that can probably help me out. But it is definitely the next step, and I'm excited to see what I can do. But for now, I just have my volunteer butternut squash, which is just about ready to get harvested, and then we're going to try to cook it up for something special.
How did your husband feel about all this?
He had mixed feelings. He thought that it was a noble cause, and he supported it, but he felt like going cold turkey from how we ate before to being 100% local was unnecessarily difficult. He said, well, why didn't we just phase this in, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, partially it's for the writing. It's a much better story if you just go for it. And the other part of it is, at least for me, it was very, like, I was thinking that I was going to phase it in. The farmer's market, if you're not in the habit of going, it just feels like that one other thing. You're like, it's Sunday morning. I don't feel like it. I'll go next week. And so it's very easy to just not. And so by going cold turkey and saying, okay, I got to eat local, it made it much easier for me to just make the switch over. As far as the actual local foods go and such, one of the things that Chad told me, Chad's my husband, was that he had never liked tomatoes, but like the tomatoes that we were getting now from the farmer's market, he loves. He'll eat them raw. He'll just pop them in his mouth. You have them sitting out on the counter. And, you know, that was something we found in a lot of situations where it was something that you might like it normally, but we really liked it when it was really local and really fresh. I think both of us came away with, you know, kind of a warm, fuzzy feeling about what we're doing and feeling like you're directly supporting your community. And then it tastes good while you're doing it, too.
Did he cook at all?
Yes. Chad and I are very much equal partners in the kitchen. He actually has the cooking skills that I don't. He used to be a line cook, so he can cut vegetables up like you wouldn't believe. And he was the person who trussed those three chickens so that you can actually roast them a little faster if you tie them up so the drumsticks are up in the air. They roast a little faster and a little more evenly. He also was the person, one of the things we didn't realize is when you get a hen from Josh's Foraging Fowls, they actually come with the necks still attached. And that's not something you see at the supermarket. Like, the necks are they're all cleanly taken off. So that was something we had to learn. And so that was actually, he was the first person to try his hand at removing the chicken neck. And he said that it was a very grounding experience.
Yes.
You bought. Yeah.
At least you didn't have to pluck it.
We didn't have to pluck it. We didn't have to behead it, but we did have to take off the neck. I do think at some point I do want to go and learn about butchering an animal because I'm going to be a meat eater. I feel like it's kind of my responsibility to actually make sure that that's something that I am comfortable with. And if I'm not, then obviously, you know, I need to get out of the kitchen. But figuratively speaking, I think that's another one of the next steps, going local with that. I also think that we're probably going to try to get a hold of some chickens of our own within the next year. Again, the difficulty in getting eggs if we don't get to the farmer's market right away.
What about the time investment? I mean, greens, you got to well for 24 hours.
You have to learn, or I had to learn, to plan ahead a lot better. I am absolutely one of those cooks that I might have grand ideas, but there's a good chance that I'll be serving you food at 10 p.m. at night because I did not plan ahead at all. So I really had to learn to think about things differently. I had to get myself in a schedule with the beans. You soak them the night before, and then that morning, I work at home a number of days during the week, so I was able to just set them to cook on the stove if I wanted them quickly, because you can get that a little quicker than the crock pot. Or if I was going out, I could just throw them in the crock pot. But then you have a lot of beans. Like, I'd cook beans en masse, and I also would cook on the weekends. I would spend, like, all of Sunday cooking. Basically, Sunday was go to the farmer's market in the morning. I'd go over to one of the Rito Downs because it has some of the most vendors. I also went to the ones on, there's one on Fridays over at Trail Dust Town. There's one on Thursdays over at the Mercado. And then there's also one on Saturdays. So I went to the Saturday one is over at Plaza Palomino. And they all have their good parts. So if you want any of those that you can make, it's great. And I know that there's some other ones as well in different areas outside of Tucson. But those are the ones that were closest for me. But anyway, so I'd go to the farmer's market and I'd buy my food. And then I would get home and the chicken would be frozen. So, you know, throw the chicken in the fridge so it can defrost. But immediately start cooking the different winter veggies. Start soaking the beans. Just start working on things. One of the things that I meant to do, and I never actually got around to making, was making some sourdough. I actually did an interview with Don Guerra, the guy behind Barrio Bread, the sourdough master, and he very slowly took me through like the dummy's guide to sourdough because I could not figure out what was going wrong with my sourdough starter. Now I know, and I actually have a successful starter at home, so I will actually be making my first batch of successfully local sourdough starter bread tonight. That's another example of something, if you want that bread, that's like an 8-hour rise time. If your kitchen's a little cold, if you're working with just a sourdough starter, like there's a lot of things that are going to have to happen before that bread is ready to go into like, you know, a big crusty loaf.
It's like caring for a baby,
guy. It is like caring for a baby. It is like caring for a baby. There were definitely a lot of nights where I would be up late continuing to prepare foods. What I saved in money, I definitely spent in time. There was a What's So Literary About Food Writing Forum that Edible hosted in conjunction with the U of A not so long ago. And one of the things that one of the speakers there was talking about was how we've started to think of food preparation as being this huge pain to do. Like, it's such an inconvenience to cook your own food. But the reality is that can be a mindful, joy-filled, enriching process. And I grew up in a family of cooks, so I've never really had a super negative relationship with cooking. But we all have our days where you don't want to do anything. You just want to get that thing from the drive-thru and not think about the food. But I think if you bring the mindfulness to the ingredients and the importance of supporting local and the positive experience it can have from continuing to grow your skills in the kitchen and feeding the people you love with those skills, I think that cooking is just such a rewarding experience. And what time you spend on it pays you back tenfold.
And you made your own tortillas?
I did. I made my own tortillas using a flour that had actually been ground by Megan. She gave me some of her flour. It was made from BKW's White Sonora wheat. I used lots of White Sonora wheat throughout it. I made the pasta from the White Sonora wheat, and I made the tortillas from the White Sonora wheat flour. I've since learned from going to Hayden Flour Mills that there are other flours that are being grown locally that sometimes you might get a more appropriate flour for some of these different jobs. I'd never thought about the idea that different species of wheat are actually going to be better or worse for what you're trying to make. So I've learned a lot since I started this. But yeah, I made my own tortillas. And the first time I made them way too thick. Also, because I couldn't buy, you know, snow cap lard. And when I started out, I didn't have like a jar of locally sourced like bacon grease sitting around or something. I did have local olive oil. So my first go around was with Queen Creek Olive Mill olive oil and with the White Sonoran wheat flour and with some of the salt that I'd gotten from the Sea of Cortez. It's called Sal de Mar. You get a nice little bag of salt and it's in this cute little embroidered bag, which is nice. place, and it helps support artisans down there. So that's nice too. So I put those three ingredients together, and you know, then I made these very thick tortillas. We wrapped them around some stuff, and they were okay. They ended up being mostly huevos rancheros tortillas, because you don't have to wrap that around anything. You just throw it there. You throw some beans, you throw some eggs on top of that. The second time, I had saved up from cooking some of the ground beef from Double Check. I had some fat to work with. I don't know if you'd qualify it as lard, because I hadn't actually purified from like pieces of fat. I did learn about making lard, but I never actually went through the process. But the animal fat worked pretty well. So that's, I think, one of the things that I want to experiment with going forward, seeing what local flours I can use to get a better result.
Would you say that your local diet is less varied than when you buy at the supermarket?
Yes and no, because when you buy at the supermarket, there's less variety overall in like the types of veggies that you can get. I feel like when you go around the farmer's market, there's like 8 different kinds of garlic that you can get, you know, from the garlic guy who has just this array of garlic. And there's all of these different foods where there's these different heirloom varieties that you would never see in the supermarket. And ditto for beans. You know, when we go to the supermarket, you have your pinto beans and your black beans. And like that's, and of course they're canned already. I mean, you could buy your pinto beans. And so I wasn't finding myself going down in the variety of foods as much, but at the same time, there would be more repetition in my meals probably because I was trying to use up all of those ingredients. So when I made a big thing of wheat berries, I ate a lot of wheat berries for a while. And when I made a big thing of beans went in a lot of things. I probably ate huevos rancheros 75% of the time for breakfast. And it was because you can't get cold breakfast cereal locally, as far as I'm aware anyway, unless I guess you wanted to make your own. But it took advantage of those different ingredients that we had. And it was filling and had lots of great nutrition in it. And you know, you take some of those tomatoes and you make a nice pico de gallo on top of it and fantastic. I think that the thing that freaked me out going into this project, I thought it was going to be so hard. I thought it was going to take over my entire life, that I wouldn't be able to do anything but cooking and shopping for food, and that was going to be my entire life. I have a baby. She was, she's now just a little over 1. She was a little under 10 months when the project started. And thankfully, you know, she couldn't like pitch a fit and be like, I don't want to eat this thing. I mean, she could, but it would not be quite the big deal that it would be if it was like a 5-year-old. I work for Edible. I do some website design development on the side. And then my husband works full time for the U of A. And he also attends a class. And then we're raising our daughter. And we have family in town, you know, and occasionally we would like to, you know, see people and leave our house. So I thought that we weren't going to have time for it. And I thought that that was going to be the biggest burden, that and maybe the cost, and that it would be really boring eating the food. I pretty much was proven wrong on all of the points. It did require an adjustment in how I viewed things. You know, I would have to say that, okay, I'm going to be spending Sunday cooking. That was what worked best for me. You don't have to spend Sunday cooking, but that was just my schedule. I'm going to be spending Sunday cooking. I'm going to be spending my money in a different way. You know, I'm going to be going to the farmer's market and I'm going to come away with this like $200 tab from things that I bought. But you know what? That $200 is whereas normally I'd be at the grocery store spending $100. Now I'm spending $200, but I'm not eating out. And then just the time that I'm investing and the different foods that I'm discovering that I can make. And if I got bored, I learned how to make something else. And none of those things came true. All of my fears were pretty much unfounded. I think everyone should give eating local a try. I think that it sounds harder than it actually is. And I think that once you start it, it's mildly addictive and you will continue to do so. It's a change in habit, but it's really worth it and it supports your community.
And you will continue to do so.
I will continue to do so. These days, I'm eating between 80 to 90% local most days. If I ever go back to 100% local, I mean, maybe I'll definitely do it for like specific meals, but there are things that you can't get, like bananas, and those are really nice to have in smoothies. So there are things that I will buy that are not local, but I'm much more mindful of it now. And I don't let myself get caught up in that trap of I'm wandering the supermarket aisle and this looks good and this looks good and this looks good. It's more like I get those couple things that I needed, and then I just plan on going to the farmer's market for the rest.
Thank you very much, Kate. Good luck with your diet.
Thank you.